Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio, your host for this half hour on the Heritage Radio Network. And today's show is being sponsored by Dixon's Farm Stand Meats. Dixon's is a purveyor of unique selection of artisanal meat and meat products. Their beef, lamb, pork, goat, and poultry are sourced from local farms, hand-picked because of their commitment to producing natural, humanely raised, high-quality meat products. Visit them at the Chelsea Market in New York City or online at dixonsfarmstand.com. Today on A Taste of the Past, I decided the weather's getting nice. Finally, the sun is coming out, and people start to think about cooking outside, or as they call it, barbecue. So I thought maybe we would put to rest some, some misunderstandings of what barbecue means, but barbecue can be anything to anyone. And I've invited a special guest. In full disclosure, I must admit, he is also my son, and that's Zach Palacio. Welcome, Zach.
Thank you, Mom.
And the reason I've brought Zach is because he's done some extensive research on barbecue and has just recently opened and introduced a different kind of barbecue to people, and I think it's something that is worth talking about. But first, to backtrack a little bit about just barbecue in general, I mean, most Americans think when they go out in the backyard and they, you know, slap a slab of steak on the grill that they're barbecuing.
They're wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, let me dispel some myths. Grilling is not barbecuing.
But to explain, putting it on the grill is grilling, and it's good.
First, let me say that your theme music is so much more civilized than the theme music I had on my show here on the Heritage Radio Network. In fact, the place smells better since I left, which is amazing. Maybe I have to come back and rub my funk all over the radio station one more time. But
we like to keep a higher profile.
Oh, sure, of course. Of
cleaner
course,
profile.
Then be boot me. But yes, grilling is often referred to as barbecuing, which is fine. I mean, but it is, I think if you want to get technical, it is inaccurate.
Right.
Barbecuing is something that's been developed over the years. It was really like Eastern Europeans bringing it to the north country of Texas. Czechs, the Polish, the Germans. You still find German settlements in northern Texas where they practice the art of barbecuing, which is smoking meat, using the smoke from wood at a low temperature to cook the meat. Oftentimes to cook it and hold it and preserve it. And initially, that's why I believe barbecue was created, was a preserving technique, making jerky, for instance.
Right.
You know, jerky was made for long trips, you know, whether, it, you know, all the way back to the age, pre-recorded history, people were smoking meat to carry it on long voyages.
And also
cooking at a low temperature.
Yeah, that in European country or the West Indies, but well, in fact the word barbecue, nobody really quite knows where it comes from.
I think maybe
it was an Indian word, the barbacoa, or
right.
French from nose to tail, barbecue from nose to tail,
right.
Because when they would do this slow roasting, this smoking, they would use every part of the animal, right?
Right.
As you do as well in your
And you find it, I mean, with, I think that the heavy influence of the Eastern Europeans, of the Germans and Czechs in the middle of the United States and particularly my focus has been, and my knowledge has come from Texas, where I've spent a lot of time hitting the areas. I mean, they use it in their charcuterie, really. So it was, barbecue wasn't necessarily employed as something, as a method of cooking meat and then serving it hot. It was a method of smoking a meat, cooking it through, preserving it, slicing it thin, and eating it in small quantities with bread or with other grains.
Right. And the smoking technique and the long, slow cooking was also, became popularized, I think, in the 1800s because of a lot of the ranchers and the cowboys out in the field were given the worst cuts of the meat.
Right.
So
right.
They're going to cook them for a long, you know, any, like you would slow roast anything, you know, slow smoke it long and low, you're going to tenderize the meat and then they could eat it.
Right. You know, and
take
not,
it with
I'm,
them.
I'm not
said.
Sure. It's a good theory. I mean, there's nothing for to base it on, but
right.
That combination of the technique that was brought over to the New World, to the United States by immigrants from Eastern Europe, you know, maybe clashing with this cowboy culture, you know, and finding, applying new parts of, new cuts of the animal to the smoker. That could be, it could be a, an actual mashup in and of itself, this barbecue that we know today, but I don't know exactly
how. Well, they all learned it from somewhere, and obviously it came, you know, it came, as you say, to the new world from the old country. And then, of course, there are the great discrepancies of how barbecue should be served and how it should be prepared.
Sure.
You know, the turf wars, let's say, between South Carolina and Texas and Tennessee. You know.
Right. You get a, you know, should it be sauced is the biggest, probably the biggest sort of argument between the two, the different cultures in the South. You know, there's North Carolina barbecue, and you can cross, you know, county lines, and they have different methods of barbecuing. There's a vinegar sauce. There's a sweet sauce. Kansas City barbecue is slicked with a sauce and rubbed with a sauce.
Yeah.
And Texas barbecue is salt and pepper. And, you know, if there's sauce on the table, it's a hot sauce, but it's salt and pepper, a wedge of cheese, and some white bread. You know, and if you cook properly, you know, salt and pepper is perfect. That's all you ever need.
Yeah.
If you dry the meat out, you know, you can have a little more margin for error with sauce. I don't subscribe to any one theory as far as what makes barbecue, other than you're cooking with smoke.
That's just it. And all of these
from wood, and
all
not,
of these
not
are
from
smoked,
scrap iron,
right? Yeah. And that's the whole point. They're all cooked long and over smoke at low temperatures, and tenderizes them, and they all come out great.
You know, that's arguable whether
well,
they all come
not
out great.
Not everyone's.
You know, and there are a lot of different theories. You know, and some of the the greatest practitioners of barbecue who are still alive today, some of these guys, you know, are sort of counter to exactly what we're talking about, what we believe. A guy like Rick Schmidt, for instance, who's, you know, one of the foremost barbecue men in the entire United States, who runs Kreitz's in Lockhart, Texas, and was formerly Schmitty's, and he split. The legacy was that there was a place called Schmitty's in Lockhart, Texas. It was owned by Rick Schmidt's father. Grandfather before that.
Probably grandfather, because it's been around a long time.
And at a certain point, there was a rift, and he split off from his sister, I believe, who kept Schmitty's, and he went off and he opened Kreitz's, which is his huge barbecue house just in the outskirts of town. And now there are rumors, and Robbie Richter, who is my partner and pitmaster at Fatty Q, has worked with Rick, and you know, so these rumors are somewhat substantiated that Rick cooks his brisket at above, you know, 400 plus degrees.
Wow.
And starts it. And there are some rumors that go even as high as 900. In barbecue books, there's a barbecue book I have that I bought in Austin my last trip down there that states that and they're alluding to him, they don't mention him by name, that he starts his brisket at 900 degrees, which I know is, you know, a bald-faced lie, because I've seen his smokers, and there's no chance that he can get them up to 900 degrees because they're brick smokers. And this is another style, which is the traditional pit smoking, which is not like the sophisticated smokers you may see in New York barbecue restaurants or most barbecue restaurants now throughout the country. These pit smokers are like brick chimneys laid on their side. So it's a brick column along the ground with you know, open space underneath and a grill on top, and then heavy cantilevered doors that close on them. So the meat actually goes on a grill surface. And then on the side of the chimney is a fire pit. So the chimney, this stack laid on its side, could be 20, 30 feet long with a fire built on right or left side of it, pushing the heat through the pit. And depending on where you place your meat, it's either hotter or cooler. So, and that's sort of a traditional pit-style barbecue.
Right. And, of course, today there are all kinds of fancy smokers. Well, obviously, you have to keep them a lot of, especially in the city, you've got to keep them indoors. So they have all kinds of fancy metal ones, which we'll talk about in a little while.
Well, they also started with the slave cooking, you know, which was really phenomenally interesting. You know, these guys and slaves, you know, historically always, they got the lousiest pieces
cuts.
of meat, but they would bury the meat, you know, they'd cook literally in a pit in the ground, and they would build a fire on top of rocks, and then they would put the meat, you know, the fire would die down, they put the meat, and they put more rocks on top of that fire, and then they put the meat on top of that, and they cover it with hay and just let it cook slowly
and
let it smolder.
And hay, right.
And, you know, they've had huge barbecue cookouts throughout the country. Historically, it's been something that has and I think actually Lyndon B. Johnson had sort of a semi-state dinner once where he cooked like a tremendous number of half cattle. I mean, seriously, throwing a half a cow down on the ground.
Pit. I know he had he had a lot of barbecue dinners.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But there was one where it was almost a sort of a grotesque amount of carnage going on that was really, really cool. But I mean, it's one of our few sort of culinary legacies here in the United States is this development of barbecue.
Barbecue, a lot of people, in fact, think that barbecue was invented in America. Obviously, we've just put that to
rest.
Right,
no, it definitely
was not.
Sure.
But, you know, but the whole, I guess, then method of the saucing or cooking it differently. But then there's another meaning to the word barbecue, and barbecue is also a noun. Barbecue means the social event that you all come together.
Right.
You all come together. Like you said, Lyndon B. Johnson, he had
barbecues.
It meant the method that the meat was cooked, but also that it was a coming together of people to enjoy the final product.
Well, I think that's why people have taken such license with it as far as it goes for the technique.
Yeah.
You know, it's not... We throw it around. It's like you said at the beginning of the show, it's summertime. It's hanging out, and we're having a barbecue. Who cares whether it's technically correct or not? It means we're going to get together. We're going to cook something up.
That's right.
You know, on a grill, in a smoker, over a pit, you know, but we're going to eat outside and, you know, and you have to have beer.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, another thing that is interesting is barbecue was so often related. People thought of barbecue being pork, always pork.
Sure.
But pork was a very staple, convenient food in the South, and so that was the food that was and then of course the butchering of the pork became a social event, because at the end of the season, if you raised this pig, then you butchered it and you invited everybody to take part in consuming it. Only the parts you would consume, of course, would only be the parts that wouldn't be put up, that wouldn't be preserved or, you know, fit to sell.
Well, you look at ham, I mean, and traditionally, you know, Black Forest
ham.
I mean, you're excuse me. I think that historically, barbecue and pork has probably been the most barbecued, in quotations there, barbecued item, for sure.
That's right. But I have to say, the first really large event, barbecue event, that I ever attended, I was about 7 years old, and it was an entire cow. And the whole community came together, and they brought in these master barbecuers like you went out and found, and it was a 3-day event. I mean, they just slowly turned this cow for a couple of days until it was finally done, and I guess probably about 250 300 people all gathered around then and had all you ended up with was a sandwich with, you know, a little bit of meat on a bun, but it was a huge social event, and it was great, and that was beef,
right? And you start to look at barbecue as an umbrella term.
Yes.
And, you know, it's sort of like, it's the classic categorization, the kingdom, phylum, species, you know, genus, species. And if you want to look at it that way, because there are different styles then. If you say, just call it all barbecue, then, of course, there's the Argentinian method that, you know, Peter Kaminsky just wrote about recently. Right. You know, there's...
Seven Fires. We had him. He was a guest on the show.
And there's, you know, you go to... You know, you go to Greece, or you go to the Mediterranean, you go to the Balkans. Everybody is smoking something or slowly grilling it over fire, because, I mean, that was the traditional method of cooking. How else were you going to cook? You had fire, you had large animals.
That's right.
You know, so you can call it, you can call all of that, almost all original cooking, you could call it barbecue.
And you, in particular, are introducing a new type of barbecue. It's not new, but new to many Americans. And when we're going to take a short break, and we come back, we're going to talk about the Asian barbecue.
Cool.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind, and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, and you're going to regret, because I'm the best as ever been."
Johnny Rosin, up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals a card.
Well, now that certainly makes you think of American barbecue. We're going to travel from American barbecue down to Southeast Asia. And my son, Zach, is the guest here on A Taste of the Past, Zach Palacio.
Hello.
And Zach has just recently opened a new restaurant called Fatty Q in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn. And the Q, of course, is, you know, the wink to barbecue, right?
Correct.
And for no other reason, it is smoked meat. But a lot of people go in there and fish, right?
Yes.
And they may think, well, this is a barbecue joint. Tell me and tell our listeners what it really is.
I don't know what it really is. I mean, you know, that's the best answer I can give you. But I'd say more so than anything, it's a restaurant that is sort of an homage to barbecue, right? I mean, in that we use two smokers, and a smoker, for the purposes of illustrating my point, is a box in which there is a fire, and we put wood in there. We make a fire out of wood, and that fire is not directly heating the interior of the box in which the food is cooked. It's actually vented, and the hot smoke from the wood fire goes into the box and circulates throughout the main chamber. Thus, it's exclusively the smoke that's cooking the meat or fish or protein or vegetables that we put. We cook eggplant in there, for instance, that we cook in the smokers. Mm-hmm. So the idea that I had sort of developed over time. Originally, it started with a conversation my girlfriend and I were having about barbecue, and Jory is her name, and Jory said to me, you know, Zach, I want to open a truck called Texie, and I want it to be a barbecue truck, and I'll drive around and, you know, be a cool little painting Texie on the side, and, you know, I'll serve barbecue to people. You know, I'll smoke it in one place, put it in the truck, and drive it around. I said, that's really cool. And we just started talking and blabbing to each other. I said, what if we did Texie Melayu? And Melayu meaning referring to Malaysian cuisine, and I used to work in a restaurant in Kuala Lumpur called Seri Melayu. So I said, what about the name Texie Melayu? And what we could do, it would be really cool. I said we could brine our meats, you know, with Indonesian bay leaves and chilies and spices. We could, you know, give a squeeze of lime and a dash of chili on the meat before we serve it, instead of just serving it naked, because she's a Texas girl and her idea was, you know, no sauce. It's a, you know, traditional Texas barbecue. So I was thinking, you know, this is a great way to play on the smoky, fatty, typical American barbecue, one that often and so often gives us palate fatigue. I mean, I know I'm, mm-hmm. you know, I'm the guy whose eyes are always bigger than his stomach. I go into a barbecue restaurant. I want this. That sounds great. Excuse me. You end up getting it. A lot of it almost tastes the same.
Tastes the same, yeah.
And there isn't really much going on in terms of just sort of that dynamic contrast that I look for in food so much, where it's piquing my palate and my palate interest, that is, where I want to have another bite or I want to go to another flavor, and there is a meat that has another flavor or a different sort of sauce or piquancy or, you know, something that really is inviting and exciting. So that sort of started ringing around in my head, that idea, and it was just bouncing around, and I got to know Robbie Richter very well. And, you know, Robbie's
a pit master from...
he's from Queens.
But he was at a lot of different barbecue places.
Well, he built the barbecue program in a well-known barbecue joint in New York called Hill Country Barbecue. So Robbie developed their barbecue program, and he sort of lost interest because they wanted to do a very traditional product. The owner of Hill Country, they do a great job, but the owner's from, his family's from Texas, and he wanted it to be sort of a traditional Texas-style barbecue. And it's a great representation of that. However, I think in my discussions with Robbie, he wanted to go the next step. He wanted to see what else he could get out of barbecue. I mean, he's a New York native, not a Texas native. Being a New York native, you know, growing up in Queens, it's the most ethnically diverse place in the entire world.
A lot of different food.
So, you know, it was only a matter of time until Robbie said, hey, there's got to be more I can do with this. So he and I, talking over time, decided that this would make sense.
Well, the other thing about, and I have to say that the food is quite, not unique so much, but it is, I mean, it is delicious. And the flavors, each different dish has its own palette of flavors going on. As you said, you don't get that palate fatigue because everything's a little bit different. Although I will say, I come home, I read there last night, and I came home and I was smelling my hands, and they smelled like smoke.
But well, that's what you want. It's a barbecue joint. It's a barbecue joint, but if you don't order meat by the pound, you
that's
know,
the other thing. Everything is a little more
composed.
Delicate. It's composed. Yeah. It's not delicate. You know, it's a small, daintier portion. Think.
Please don't use the word dainty with my
okay,
restaurant.
A delicate
I might lose customers.
Portion. A delicate portion, but the flavors are so high that all you need is that smaller taste, and boom, you know, the flavors explode, and there they
go.
Well,
and that's, you know, the thing with barbecue, and the reason why, I mean, the portions are certainly not dainty.
They're not dainty.
But it's not like a huge slab of meat on a plate
right.
in your face. And that was deliberate because, well, for two reasons. One, we use all locally raised grass-fed, not always grass-fed because I'm not 100% on total grass-fed, but often grass-fed and grain-finished. and I use both, all grass-fed and then grass-fed and grain-finished. But it's all local, pastured meat, naturally raised, no hormones. I mean, we buy, just like a fatty crab and a cabrito, you know, we buy a high-quality product, and then we do our best to offer it at a great value. Making my food margins incredibly high and frustrating, but we have to watch them carefully because I believe that, you know, people should be able to eat good quality food for a good price. And so that's one reason why the portions aren't huge, because if I were to give huge portions, the cost would be prohibitive. Secondly, though, and that was just sort of a matter of fact and something that came after I saw the prices of all the meat I was buying. But the initial idea was to make smaller portions so that people could taste and they wouldn't get burned down on it, because barbecue is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Barbecued meat, I mean, the smoke, if you have a piece of meat that has a good fat content in it, that in and of itself is filling. And you add smoke to it, it's like adding another layer of heaviness to it. And it does. It fills you up more quickly.
In addition to whatever you do, I mean, tell me what you do to the meats. Like that, I know the chicken is just—it's the most succulent, tender chicken with all kinds of flavors going on in it. What do you do? You don't put this chicken in the smoker.
No, we brine it first. Mm-hmm. We brine it in, you know, with garlic and herbs and chilies. And a brine is a salt or salt and sugar solution. So, you know, we drop it in this liquid salt solution. It's like seawater, you know, and it sits for a day before we cook it. And then we also inject it. We inject it with a little bit of the brine mixed with a little bit of honey, you know, and that's totally natural, but we just get some of the flavor into the chicken.
And you start with a really good chicken, as
well,
you said.
We buy all local chicken. And then we serve the chicken, just barbecue chicken chopped up. We make a sauce with palm sugar and fish sauce. You know, this is a Southeast Asian component here. Palm sugar and fish sauce, which we smoke. We put big trays, you know, filled with the palm sugar fish sauce mixture. We put it into the smoker, and we let it go for several hours. So it picks up smokiness.
And turns a real nice dark amber color.
Oh, yeah, it's
too.
Like a, yeah, it's
red,
a
reddish amber color.
Dark, yeah, it's like a reddish amber. And then we add a little bit of lime juice to that, and we add minced chilies and minced cucumber and minced red onion and cilantro stem. And young ginger, and that's a little condiment that you can choose to add to your chicken, or you keep the chicken as is.
Well, now let's take the ribs, for instance, the pork ribs.
Yeah.
Do you treat them any differently than any other barbecue restaurant before you barbecue them, or
No?
It's just the presentation of the sauce.
They're rubbed down. They're rubbed with a mixture of salt and Indonesian long peppercorn. And if you've ever smelled an Indonesian long peppercorn, you know it doesn't smell like your normal peppercorn. It's more floral. Mm-hmm. It's more complex. It's more expensive, certainly. But it's amazing. And I have a wonderful spice guy who I'm buying from. His company's called La Boite Epice. His name's Lior. And he's become a good friend. And he's a great guy. And he brings in the best spices in New York.
Now, is the Asian long pepper the same as long pepper, the ancient long pepper? It's like long and
it like sort of looks like a dried mulberry, maybe. It's sort of more grayish color and kind of light gray in color.
It's dark.
It's dark, but it looks. I mean, it almost looks like a mini petrified pine tree, like coniferous tree.
Yeah, okay.
But it's dark, and it's wonderfully aromatic. And it's funny, because I was talking to Robbie the other day, and he had thought we ran out of the long peppercorn. He just couldn't find it. And he started to make a mix of some mixed peppercorns, because he was last minute. He needed to get this done. And he's like, Zach, next to those long peppercorns, he's like, I just didn't like this mixture of, and we have great peppercorn. We have beautiful, you know, from Lior, we have beautiful white pepper, Telecherry black pepper, Sarawak black pepper, and green peppercorns. You know, we have wonderful spices.
But it just didn't have that nuance.
So that's what's unique to the ribs. And then the method by which Robbie cooks them, I mean, he's about precision. You know, we spend infinite amounts of time on brisket, which seems to be the most challenging meat of all to cook. And you know, it's that classic Texas meat. You go to every Texas barbecue restaurant and has brisket. So we sort of wanted to ante up and have our own brisket. But, you know, it's a tough meat. And I never had it. Every barbecue restaurant I've ever gone to, it's always been dry here and there. And we're constantly looking at how to do it in the traditional method without cooking it. I've braised plenty of brisket, and you know, and I've cooked brisket in steam ovens, or you know, in combi ovens, or CVAPs, ovens that have humidity present, so where you can cook things very slowly and you retain the moisture. But it's not smoking, and it's not what we're doing. So you know, we've constantly challenged, or we're constantly challenging ourselves by trying to reach a higher point with the brisket, and it's an ongoing process. And one day we like it. In the next day, we say, "Oh, this is crap," and we want to move to the next one. So, you know, it's. I think that often what you find in a lot of barbecue restaurants is there's not the same level of sort of culinary technique and attention paid to the meat, and it's often people are cooking. They're not necessarily trained chefs, and you know, like in Robbie's instance, he's not a trained chef, but he is surrounded by trained chefs who are interested in trying to achieve a higher level with the barbecue. So it's fun for him, and it's a challenge for everybody.
So you take this great product that he's carefully smoked to the right tenderness, and then you layer all this other stuff around it.
Right.
Not on top of, but around it and
well,
with it. Right?
Correct, yeah. I mean, we're not over-saucing the items.
Right.
We like to leave the meat somewhat speaking for itself, but what we do before it's cooked and after, you know, is in the accoutrement, are you know what's really unique. I mean, before we cook the brisket, we rub it down with black pepper and kefir lime leaf and lime zest, and it gets a wet rub with shallots and garlic and ginger and coconut milk. So I mean, there's certainly the Southeast Asian palate applied to it.
Well, and you do it does taste different, and I have to say that you don't have to eat as much to feel really satisfied, because the flavors are so... Each piece of meat has, as I said, a distinct flavor, something
right.
different, and it's not just piling in meat where all you're tasting is maybe the sauce or the smoke. You know,
right.
You're tasting a lot of different things going on here. And I have to say, I did not give your introduction... I didn't give you full credit in your introduction. Now, you have... This is your third fatty restaurant, as I say.
That's right.
Fatty Crab is the first, a Malaysian,
right.
like street food type restaurant.
You know, and I think it's probably unfair to all those cultures to call it any one thing, because it's not, I mean, there is a heavy Malaysian influence in Fatty Crab,
mm-hmm.
but it's not strictly Malaysian.
Southeast Asian.
And we take the palate of Malaysia and we try to do it justice, and I think we do. But we don't cook everything in traditional methods, and they're not all traditional dishes. We riff on it, but you know, we make all of our own curry spice blends, you know, from the dried spice all the way to the wet mix, to combining it, to cooking it out. I mean, everything we make there is from scratch, but it was influenced predominantly by Malaysian cuisine, yes.
Well, a lot of my friends of Asian origin love to eat there, and you know you're doing something right when you look around the people who are eating in the restaurant, and
yeah.
you've got a good mix of cultures in there and a lot of Asians.
It's a total turn on. Yeah,
yeah.
You know? And they're always surprised that some white kids are cooking it. You know, and that's cool, and that's
yeah.
cool, and people dig the flavors.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Fatty Q does right now. It's doing very well. It's popular.
Well,
of course,
it's new.
Williamsburg is a fun place to go too. For you know,
I have a good
out.
Feeling on it, about it. Knock on wood, but and that's because I know the people who work there.
Mm-hmm.
And really, at the end of the day, it's a business is about who's there all the time. And we have great people who are really interested, and they're into turning people on to a good party. And that's what you want when you
go barbecue.
A barbecue.
There
it's
you go.
A barbecue. Yeah, that's a good note to end on. It is a barbecue.
Yeah, it's a and I hope that it will be perceived well, because it really is. I think this whole idea of taking barbecue and bringing it, or not taking it, bringing it back from all the other places where it's being done, and letting the American food world know that there are a lot of different ways to eat this food.
Just a note, by the way, you were talking about barbecue as an umbrella term.
Yeah.
In Southeast Asia, I've witnessed rice being stuffed into banana into bamboo and smoked over coconut husks. You know, and I mean, there's coconut husks are so, I mean, they're ubiquitous, so they're used as a fuel. And a lot of satay, for instance, you know, you're cooking it over wood or sometimes over charcoal. This could all be called barbecue.
The French use old vines.
Right. Yeah, well, they're so freaking elegant, aren't they, those French?
Yeah, they
you know,
are.
They're so goddamn superior. But, you know, at the same time, the great thing is that barbecue brings people together.
It does. It does. And I'm so glad that you came and joined me here today.
Thanks.
I went and ate at your restaurant last night. It was only fair you come and join me.
Sure, anytime.
But I think
my
it's
pleasure.
I think it's a fun thing to talk about. And
Go to Dixon's.
And go to Dixon's. Go to Dixon's Farm Stand Meats. I want to thank Dixon's for being our sponsor today, and thank Roberta's for being here, and also thank my producer, Jack Inslee, and my engineer, Nat Wiener. Again, I'm Linda Palacio, and this has been A Taste of the Past.